From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here as usual with
Just Jamie,
as well as
Cousin Adam.
And today's show is all about our favorite bad movies. But first, let's do a quick Thanksgiving recap. We talked about our past traditions in the previous episode, so let's discuss this year's festivities. Jamie, tell us if you started any new traditions this year, or did the old ones also make it to 2019?
A little bit of both. I did the usual, got up, did a lot of parade watching. Our responsibility was to make this like olive platter, and I cannot stand olives. My wife cannot stand olives.
Same.
Just the thought nearly brings me to gag. Yet somehow this was our responsibility, so we powered through that. So yeah, that was all traditional, the parade and everything. We did kind of do somewhat of a new thing for dinner. My ex, with whom I've mentioned before and with whom I get along with very well, and it's great, did a big Thanksgiving for like my family and her family and her significant other's family, and our kids were there and friends, and it was kind of like a big to-do. They did a great job hosting. So that was kind of new, and it was also kind of awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Food was delicious, and as we talked about in the last episode, I liked the starches, and I definitely partook. But I also did have turkey.
The meat garnish?
Yes, the meat garnish.
Nice. Let's see. I had a grand total of 3 Thanksgivings, technically,
lucky
this year.
Lucky bastard.
And it was supposed to be 4. But the 4th one is a bit of a sore subject.
Oh.
So, by the time all was said and done, my turkey eating was far more than garnish levels. And I could probably skip a few Thanksgivings and be fine. But they were all enjoyable. And across all 3, I saw 0 seconds of the parade this time.
Oh.
Which is kind of a bummer. But I guess those are the breaks when you, A, don't have network TV, and 2, don't get up until 10:30.
Well, yeah, that's going to get in your way just a little bit.
Right. Well, speaking of large meals, we have got a veritable feast of a main topic today, so we're going to skip 3-2-1 pop and go straight into the bad movie breakdown. All right, for today's topic, we are once again going to hear from all 3 Nerd Bomber presenters, and I think I'm going to start this one off. We each have 3 picks for this topic, and my first one is a little movie from 1998 called Spice World.
Get on the Spice Bus.
Get out of the way!
For rollicking good fun.
Ha, 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 ha.
It's a surefire delight.
Yes!
Spice World. It's fresh, fun, and hot.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5,
go! I love those girls!
Spice World.
It's incredible!
The Spice Girls movie.
Yes!
Rated PG.
That's right. You know, they took an interesting approach where they could have just gone the route that so many others had before and since, where they just kind of cut together like a big budget concert movie. They actually kind of had this road trip movie, this weird comedy with cameo appearances, and, you know, just like they really crafted this. I mean, it's based on things that would happen to them, you know, it's struggles with like a weird manager and like the tabloids and, you know, real things that occur in the life of a pop star, but all done, you know, tongue-in-cheek and done for laughs. And I grew up as a pretty huge Spice Girls fan right from about 96, and I even saw this twice in the theater.
Wow.
When it came out. And I bought the VHS the first day it was released. Just so I could get the free poster that came with it.
Oh, man. So important.
This is universally considered a laughably bad movie. But I disagree. I consider this legitimately entertaining. And mostly because it's entirely self-aware. Despite being trashed by critics, Spice World is listed among the founder of the Golden Raspberry Awards 100 most enjoyably bad movies ever made.
Well, you can't argue with that. Man, I wish I could comment. I've never seen it. The Spice Girls are great. I have nothing bad to say about them. They captured something in their time that was, it's hard to overstate it, actually. You know, looking back so long, maybe it's easy to forget, but they were definitely an important iconoclast of the 90s. But I've never seen the movie, and I suppose I should. I suppose I should give it a go.
I'm willing to bet you actually would enjoy it, and maybe you could even pass it off as like something you want to watch with your daughters. Not that you need any justification, but you know.
I watch what I want to watch.
So that's my first pick.
All right, so maybe I'll jump in and go next. This one is it's the farthest thing from obscure as franchises go, but it was so poorly thought of and so poorly received that it almost sunk a franchise that would need to be rebooted. Not fully rebooted, but they would need to take a totally different approach when they came back at it. And that movie is Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Star Trek The Motion Picture is all you'd expect, and more. The most surprising thing about it is what happens to the people. Kirk, McCoy, Scotty, Sulu, Uhura, Chekhov, Decker, Ilia, and Mr. Spock. The human adventure is just beginning. Star Trek, The Motion Picture, rated G.
Usually thought of as basically three things: long, boring, and self-aggrandizing.
Right.
But I love it. I love the visuals of this movie. You know, it takes them like 7 minutes to approach the Enterprise in the shuttle and back up to the dock. And it's just, there's no, they're just showing the ship, and it's just, they are just reveling in the visuals that they produce for this movie, which are really great. They really are. But I mean, it does, they do take their time with it. But man, I just have always loved this movie. It's always been one of my favorites. I do have there are other Star Trek movies that I like more, but there's just something about it where I will sit there enthralled as they pad out the runtime with these long, long shots of kaleidoscopic space vistas.
Yeah, that scene in particular is what kind of was make or break for me when I finally saw this movie. Granted, that is kind of what stuck with me about it, and I think that's unfair. And this was probably 20 years ago as well, so I definitely need to see it again. Because I've actually come to appreciate those qualities in movies overall in general. You know, we just watched both of the Blade Runners, and there's some similarities in those movies with the pacing and things like that. And that kind of stuff is actually what I look for in movies now. And I think that scene, that Enterprise scene, is also cool because I believe it was the debut of the piece of music which ended up becoming the theme for The Next Generation.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, how do you go wrong there?
Played it about half speed.
Right.
But no, it's really great. And a lot of the special effects when they go into the V'ger cloud, the music they play when the Klingon ships are there, the special effects when V'ger sort of disintegrates the Klingon ships and other space vessels, you know, before the Enterprise intercepts it in space. There's just so much that I like about it. The super weird pajama uniforms. I could go on and on. I really love the movie, and it is not well liked. And like I said, it was such a failure because it was made on such a big budget. You know, they kind of, it's like the Star Wars craze was in full swing, so they wanted to make a big budget. Star Trek's coming back. And it failed so dramatically that in order to continue the movie franchise, they had to scale down the budget to just a fraction of what they had before. And they made Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Now, The Wrath of Khan is basically universally stated to be the best of the Star Trek movies. I'm not a huge fan of Wrath of Khan, and I know that's kind of a heretical thing to say, but the limited budget really shows through on screen, and it's hard for me to get around. I like my Star Trek to be grand, and Wrath of Khan is not.
Yeah, I actually agree with you on that. All right, Cousin Adam, how are you going to start your list?
My first pick, number 3 on the list, is a Christmas movie starring action hero himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is Jingle All the Way.
Howard Langston would give his son the world.
Tell me, what do you want?
Unfortunately, he wants a Turbo Man.
You got the doll, right?
The doll.
Now, one father is trying to find the hottest holiday gift.
I'm gonna make it. Sorry, but I'm gonna make it.
And one young boy is getting a Christmas.
That's my kid!
To remember. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jingle All the Way, rated PG.
Of course.
So, I'm not really sure how to explain this, but when I did my picks, you know, one of the measurements I used to show how bad of a movie it was. Now, it's obviously not all indicative of the terribleness of the movie. I did look at the Rotten Tomato scores, not the critic scores, but the audience scores for it. This one scores a paltry 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, it's certified.
Wow.
Yeah, it's certified rotten, which I kind of find shocking. Because it's really funny in parts, and I think that in itself should kind of, you know, push it up a little bit. I think the funniest part, one of the funniest parts, is where he's running down the street, chanting the reindeer names in his thick Austrian accent. And there's another scene where Phil Hartman's trying to, you know, schmoozing with his wife, and he's talking to him on the phone.
Yeah, eating them cookies.
Yeah, he's eating the cookies, and he's like, "Put the cookies down now!" Like, that's like, you know, meme worthy.
These cookies.
Yeah, he was laying it on thick on that one. But you know, Phil Hartman, I think, is actually the unsung hero of this movie.
Definitely.
You know, it's a vintage Phil Hartman performance, but you know. This movie, it kind of suffers from a lack of identity, because what I think the underlying theme was supposed to be was it's kind of taking a satirical look at, you know, materialism, especially during the holidays. As you know, the plot of the movie centers around his son wanting the It action figure of the season, which is a Turbo Man, and he waits too long and they're sold out, so he has to go on this like zany quest to find it on Christmas Eve. But it kind of strays away from that narrative, and it kind of just turns into a bunch of gags. So I think really what people don't like about this movie is that it just doesn't pick an identity and stick with it. You know, it just constantly kind of goes between the two. On top of that, Jake Lloyd is a terrible child actor. And
as the world would see even more a little later.
Right. And I think I'm kind of shocked that George Lucas, you know, probably saying, "Oh, I really want Jake Lloyd to be young Anakin," and you know, he must have looked at his resume and looked at his performances, and if he saw this movie, I'm kind of shocked that he would have said he was good. But yeah, so that's my first pick, number three, Jingle All the Way. Like I said, good gags, some funny parts to it, but see, I think that's why I like it. You know, to me, it's a good bad movie, because like, obviously it's terrible, but there's, you know, comedic Arnold Schwarzenegger is like just as good as action star, I think, sometimes. So,
yeah. And it's certainly just as popular in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's done plenty of movies that were, I mean, even in the middle of his 80s, early 90s action hero days, he did Twins,
yeah,
you know, with Danny DeVito, which got some pretty good critical acclaim, you know. So it's kind of weird that he did that, but yeah, I mean, well, yeah, it's like, I guess it's probably like anything. You don't want to be like quote unquote typecast,
right?
And he didn't want to just be this burly action hero bodybuilder type, you know, and he wanted to do something that was funny, and it actually comes off. And I think what makes a lot of it funny too is his accent, unfortunately, you know, not to be
right,
you know, xenophobic or anything like that, but it's just, it just kind of adds a layer to it that he's a foreigner, you know.
Well, I mean, they were smart to use it to, you know, its maximum entertainment value.
Yep, and he was smart.
Yeah, and also, like, I mean, I don't know if you can really point to anybody that's happened with, where you're kind of running two different types of careers at the same time. But that I think that was smart, because that was, like, the lighter, more comedic movies that he did were pretty much all of our gateway drug into Terminator and Predator and all those.
Right.
You know, I was watching Kindergarten Cop before I watched any of the other stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was a good one. And that's weird, too, because that's one of those movies that's, like, almost two different movies in one, kind of like Home Alone, you know, because there's, like, this really serious drug dealing, I'm going to murder this wife situation where, but he's, you know, it's funny because he's trying to teach a bunch of kindergartners.
That's true.
It's so weird, you know, and I don't know. It's just like two movies. I always like the two movies in one. I feel like I'm getting a deal or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Plus, it's, you know, it's like The best stuff is like that. The best cartoons have always been like that. It's just you watch it when you're a kid, and then you go back years later, and you're like, oh, wow, this is all here, too?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
That was a good choice. My next pick is going to be a movie for guys who like movies. And this one is called Roadhouse.
You want them? We got them. Movies for guys who like movies. Coming up next.
The name, Star Wars. His office is a barroom brawl. His business is to end it. Patrick Swayze, Kelly Lynch, Roadhouse. Tomorrow at 8 on the TNT Wednesday Night Movie.
I think it's pretty well known that this is considered to be cheesy fun at best. And just a horrendous 80s cliche that is laughable at worst.
Oh, man. I watched it recently.
And all of those things are things that I love. yeah, this is, you know, it qualifies for the term guilty pleasure for sure, but I really don't feel that guilty about it. I'm aware of what it is, and I like it for its own merits. But I genuinely enjoy watching it, and it's just a lot of fun. I view Roadhouse the same way I view watching an Expendables movie. I know exactly what I'm getting when I go in.
Right.
You know, and I smile the whole time, and it's just pure, you know, goofy satisfaction and enjoyment. And they do put enough substance in there to make it so it's not this completely hollow, you know, visual movie. You know, there's enough good music. There's enough interesting cameos. There's enough fight scenes that are fun. I mean, they're over the top and unrealistic. There's enough interesting elements to Patrick Swayze's Dalton character with the Zen and the philosophical aspects
and the throat ripping.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's that's the cherry on the sundae. Pain don't hurt. and you know, endless quotable lines. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I feel.
I love. There's a couple things that stick out, and they're weird things. Okay. First of all, there's a scene where the woman, the lead, comes over and hangs out with him in his barn loft apartment.
Right.
And they're like hanging out on the overhanging roof, I think. It's the middle of summer in the South. He's just got the windows open with no screens. And all I can think of, do you know how fucking buggy that would be?
Yeah.
But they want it to look all dramatic. You know, you're hanging out in the summer night. Right. And then the other thing I think is hilarious. Okay, so you've got this bar and it's a mess and the bouncers can't keep it together. And so they bring in Patrick Swayze's character to you know, whip him into shape. And it's like they all know who he is because he's this world-famous bouncer. Like, if you're a bouncer, you're so in the community of bouncers that there are, like, famous bouncers that you know.
Right.
Like, if you work on power lines, there's a power line guy who's, like, the best power line guy. And everybody knows who he is in Power Line Guys Quarterly.
Right.
So I think that's hilarious that he comes in and is like, that's the guy. That's the guy.
That's him.
Like, also, there's a monster truck, just for the record.
You can't have feathered Patrick Swayze at his ridiculously, you know, ballet dancer physique best and not have a monster truck involved.
You know, I could continue singing its praises, but I think I'm going to wait until the next time Roadhouse inevitably comes up on this show. So
so I guess I'm up.
Yep.
I'm going to have a hard time living up to Roadhouse with this pick, I got to say. I have picked something that's not only bad, but also incredibly obscure and unknown. It is the Ice Pirates.
The Ice Pirates. Let's party. See startling special effects. See depravity in zero gravity. See glamour girls from another galaxy. See kung fu robots. And delight in the mysteries of the seventh world. The one place in the universe to get a decent glass of water.
Don't do that.
You insist.
How's it going? Oh, it's going great. How's it going with you?
The Ice Pirates.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Starring Robert Urich, Angelica Houston, Ron Perlman. It's a weird movie. It's ostensibly a space comedy, but it's not a satire like Spaceballs. Although some of the comedy is getting pretty close to jocular satire. It's not exactly deep stuff.
Right.
They have to, you know, clear the ship of space herpes after all. That's what makes it bad. What makes it good is that the visuals are fucking amazing.
Hmm.
They come up with some really, really unique stuff. And there's this big sort of sand crawling machine on these giant wheels that's really cool. Angelica Houston's like this badass barbarian warrior in space. It's got some stuff going for it, but it is a weird one, and it's definitely not for everybody.
That's one of those that I keep seeing bumped into, like, searches on, like, streaming services, and yeah, I guess it's programmed to show itself to me when based on my previous interests, so that kind of makes sense. But I think I've seen it on DVDs where, like, the collection of four on one disc or whatever,
right,
or in one box. And I've always been very intrigued, but I've never actually seen it. So it's very cool and interesting to hear about this.
Yeah. Maybe I should bring it over.
I think we have some plans in the works. All right. What's your number two, Cousin Adam?
Yet again, another movie from 1993 starring our old pal Arnie Schwartz. And they killed his second cousin, Frank. Big mistake. It's Last Action Hero.
Imagine if your favorite movie hero stepped off the screen.
My cow!
So this is the real world.
And into your life.
You know how you always say you wished I had more friends?
Hello, Mrs. Madigan.
The critics are calling Last Action Hero one phenomenal movie. Bigger, better, and funnier than anything you've ever seen. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
For theaters and advanced tickets, call 777-FILM.
Excellent choice.
Thank you. So as with the first one, I did look up the Rotten Tomato score. Once again, not all indicative of its quote-unquote badness or goodness. It has a Rotten Tomato score audience score of 36%, so not very good.
Right.
And as far as the absurdity of the movie goes, this movie is pretty absurd. You know, I read some articles about it. When it came out, you know, reviews and stuff like that. And what I agree with the most is that this movie is kind of described as a movie that is too smart for its own good. It's kind, you know, it's a movie that's kind of, it's basically making fun of itself, you know, and it's using the over-the-top action movie tropes of the time. You know, there's like all these like huge explosions, and they're just like ridiculous in nature, and they're not needed, and the action sequences are over the top. I mean, when, you know, the main character is actually Danny Madigan, the child. I think he was like 13 or 14 in the movie. When he actually goes into the movie world, there is like an animated police cat.
Right.
It's, you know, voiced by Danny DeVito, and you know, that's just perfectly normal. And of course, you know, as he goes into the movie, he can predict everything that's going to happen because, like I said, it's, you know, a predictable action movie. But so I mean, this movie just kind of, you know, to me, it kind of comes off as a little messy. You know, it's not, like I said, it's kind of making fun of itself. It's too smart for its own good. It doesn't really know where it's going. But if you haven't seen it, I mean, the main premise of this movie is that this kid lives with his mom. She's a single parent, and he kind of loses himself in, you know, action movies. And this fake Arnold Schwarzenegger action character named Jack Slater is like one of his favorite movie franchises at the time, and you know, he befriends this old projectionist at a movie theater in like smack dab in the middle of New York City. He gets like this so-called magic ticket that the character got from Harry Houdini when he was still alive, and it transports him into the movie, which is kind of cool because that's kind of one of my fantasies as a child, you know, was to
going into a movie,
right, go into the movie and live in the movie world and be able to predict what happens. Of course, my pick would have been Star Wars, of course. That's the world I would have lived in. But it does have some great humor to it. There are some great scenes. My favorite scene in the movie, and one of my all-time favorite sequences, because it's kind of a comedy as well, you know, like I said,
right,
it's making fun of itself. He's trying to prove to Jack Slater that they're in a movie, so they go to Blockbuster Video, and he's walks in and he asks the clerk where the Schwarzenegger films are, and she says foreign films are in the back. He's like, no, he's like, action. And she tells him down the hall, you know, to the left or whatever, and they walk in there, and he goes up to the Terminator 2 movie display cutout, and it's Sylvester Stallone
right
sitting there as, you know, the Terminator. And it's just weird what was agreed to, you know, right. to film that scene. You know, putting Stallone in like his probably his number one role for Schwarzenegger at the time.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, this is really a movie where Arnold Schwarzenegger is like at his best, and you can tell he doesn't really take himself too seriously in this movie, which I think is when Arnold does his best work. You know, I think the same thing happened with Kindergarten Cop. You know, he was like this foreign substitute teacher, yeah. and it was just hilarity ensued.
Jingle All the Way and stuff like that, yeah.
Exactly.
Another aspect, I think, to this idea of bad movies is, you know, movies that are kind of shit on or overlooked in their own time and then become kind of, people become aware of their merits years later.
Right.
I think this is probably one of those that, you know, sort of has become a bit of a cult classic. It's definitely more well thought of now. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, you know, people, your perspective changes and you can see like the messages, how it pertains more now than maybe then, like, you know, because Arnold's career was still in full swing at that point.
Right.
So it was just kind of seen as this like, you know, big cartoony parody or whatever. But there's some structure underneath there.
Right.
A little almost like a modern Alice in Wonderland kind of idea.
Yeah, definitely. Like, goes through the look, or the, what do you call it, the looking glass, or yeah. down the rabbit hole. And
through the projection screen.
Well, it's funny because I remember when he gets transported into the movie Dynamite comes flying through the screen, and yeah. he's like, Nick, and he gets up and like runs away from the dynamite, but he runs toward the screen for some reason instead of out the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And then when it explodes, he's in the back seat of his car
right.
while they're chasing him after they killed his favorite second cousin, Frank, which was a big mistake, as we already mentioned. But
okay, I guess that brings us to my third pick. Which, I mean, if we're starting from 3-1, it has to be my number one pick. It can't be topped. It is the bad movie to end all bad movies. And I can't say that I enjoy it in the traditional sense, but I don't know if I've ever had more fun and entertainment from watching any bad movie as I have with this. And if you haven't guessed, the title of this movie is The Room.
Oh, good Lord.
The most notorious of all bad movies.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
Hey, Danny.
Where's my money, Danny?
The gun down.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Just shut up.
Hey, stop it up with this world.
The Room, a film with the passion of Tennessee Williams, directed by Tommy Wiseau. The best movie of the year. Experience this quirky new black comedy. It's a riot.
It is so bad that its creator, who put this out as a serious effort, then was forced to relabel it as a black comedy because nobody took it seriously.
Well, that doesn't make any fucking sense either, by the way.
Nope, not at all. It was desperation. For anybody who has been living under a pop culture rock for the last decade, this was created by a man named Tommy Wiseau, who himself is a walking bad movie, just an endlessly fascinating human being.
He's a mystery from parts unknown and a time unknown.
Yeah. Nobody knows how old he is. Nobody knows what country he's from. He speaks with a vaguely European accent. It could be from Germany. It could be from Russia. It could be from anywhere. He kind of, you know, probably smart on his part. He purposely kind of refuses to really get into any specifics in those areas. Nobody knows where he got the money to make this movie. He spent a few million dollars. none of it shows up on screen. And it's just the movie itself is... It watches as if it's three or four different movies crammed together into one. Plot lines just like disappear in the middle of sentences and things never to be seen again.
I was going
to
say, it's almost like, okay, there was a series that had these actors and these characters, but the movie is a spliced together thing from different episodes.
Right. That is a good way to describe it. There's also full of gratuitous, unnecessary sex scenes that are completely awkwardly staged. And there's, I want to say at least one of them is just repeated, just cut and pasted again.
Oh, God.
And then the music behind it is just the most unimaginably terrible cliche. There's so many parts that are so inexplicable that they've become memes. They've become, you know, much parodied pieces of extended pop culture. You know, skits on other shows have made fun of them and referenced them. It is bizarre. And it is my number one pick.
I guess I should watch that one.
Yeah.
Ice Pirates in the Room.
The Room.
Got plans.
What do you have left on your list?
So I've called an audible here.
Okay.
First of all, I've positioned myself badly on this episode because nothing can live up to Roadhouse. Nothing can live up to The Room. Apparently, all of my picks are going to be science fiction, and that is Space Hunter: Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
In 2 weeks, Columbia Pictures will present 3D as you've never seen it before. The first quality 3D film backed by a major studio. The first to use a new state-of-the-art 3D process. This is Space Hunter: Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
Beautiful.
Now, this is one that you have seen because I brought it over here and we watched it.
Yep.
It stars Peter Strauss, Molly Ringwald, Ernie Hudson, and Michael Ironside, and it's fucking great.
I agree.
It is very ambitious. There's a lot of set pieces. There's like those slime monsters and the Amazon women in the cave. And Michael Ironside playing a character named Overdog, who's like basically a more grotesque version of Darth Vader. There's a scene with a war machine that's built onto train tracks, and they get attacked by motorcycles with spheres around them and jet-powered gliders. He's like a Han Solo character, basically.
Right.
And he has to rescue these women from a planet they crash-landed when their cruise ship was bombarded by cosmic so-and-so. And they get snatched up by this colony or this group of people. It's post-apocalyptic, and they're ruled over by this cyborg guy named Overdog who basically steals their life force in order to live. And he gives this great performance, and it's just... Molly Ringwald, like sort of before she was a star, Ernie Hudson, I don't know. The whole thing's great. I'm a big fan of it. I recommend everybody goes and finds it. It's probably much more watchable for most people than Ice Pirates. So if you're going to choose one bad, obscure sci-fi movie to watch based on what I've mentioned today, I'll point them towards Space Hunter.
Yeah, I think anybody would consider it objectively a bad movie, but I think that's more due to when it came out and what its competition was and things like that than it really being bad. I mean, the effects are great. The costuming is great. The actors are all really, you know, probably weren't at the time, but became pretty top-level talent.
Yeah.
And I remember being excited at the time when I first watched it with you about the connection to Ghostbusters. It came out the year before Ghostbusters, and Elmer Bernstein did the music, and, of course, Ernie Hudson was in the cast.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot to be surprised by in this. And, yeah, I agree with you. It is a very enjoyable, quote-unquote, bad movie.
Again, I love it. I recommend it. It might not be good, but it's good to me.
Cousin Adam, how do you compete with that?
Well, before I give you my number one pick, I'm going to give you my honorable mentions. I did pick Roadhouse as one of my honorable mentions. To me, the reason it was a good movie was probably because it was my early teen adolescent days, and that basically had everything an early teen adolescent boy would want to see in it.
Fuck yeah.
Not to get into too broad of detail, but it did have a lot of boobs in it. I also picked the screen version of Mortal Kombat and the movie Starship Troopers, based on the Robert Heinlein book, I'm sorry. But anyway.
Solid picks.
This movie stars our good buddy Sylvester Stallone doing yet another absurd movie. So you'll see my trend here is 80s, 90s huge action stars doing things that are absurd. Also from 1993, Demolition Man.
He's a cop from the 90s who just woke up in the 21st century.
Not many people get a second chance, John Spartan.
She's his new partner.
What I wouldn't do for some action.
With all the right moves.
I'm impressed.
And all the wrong phrases.
Take this job, and you can shovel it.
Close enough.
Sylvester Stallone. Wesley Snipes.
Demolition Man, rated R. Starts Friday, October 8th at a theater near you.
As with my other picks, the Rotten Tomatoes score on this one is actually 62%. So this isn't really, I wouldn't really consider that bad as an audience score, because I mean, it's above 50%
right.
on Rotten Tomatoes. But I think the badness, so to speak, from this one comes from, you know, not really getting good critical acclaim, not having like a big box office run, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think what makes this movie quote unquote bad, once again, is just the pure absurdity of what you see in this movie. So just a quick synopsis, if you haven't seen it, Stallone is a cop. His name is John Spartan, which is, you know,
you're starting it off great.
I know you're starting it off great. He's a Spartan. No foreshadowing there. chasing a criminal named Simon Phoenix, played by Wesley Snipes. And basically what happens is Wesley Snipes' character tricks them into blowing up a building that has these hostages they were looking for. So they actually put him in a cryo-freeze prison. And while you're in cryo-freeze, you're supposed to have like your behavior modified and you get subliminal messages and stuff like that. Of course, Wesley Snipes' character, Simon Phoenix, is also arrested and he goes into the same thing. But what happens, what kicks the movie off is that it takes place like 30 years in the future. So now you're talking like, you know, now, you know, 2020 or something. I can't remember the exact year, but
almost. It's actually 2032.
Wesley Snipes escapes from the cryo-freeze prison during his parole hearing, and he seems to be faster and stronger than before. But now the police officers of this future can't handle him because it's a peaceful society. So they're not trained in, you know, counterterrorism, basically. So, of course, they hatch the plan. The best plan they can come up with is to unfreeze John Spartan to go after him because he was the guy that caught him in the first place. So anyway, this movie's absurd because the future is this lovey-dovey, watered-down reality where, you know, you're not allowed to swear. The only music on the radio are old, wholesome commercial jingles. Taco Bell is the only restaurant to survive the franchise wars, whatever that means. And don't forget, it does have a scene of Dan Cortez singing the Jolly Green Giant on a piano as they walk into Taco Bell. Which is awesome because Dan Cortez is like one of the worst. never really liked the guy. He did have a pretty good role on that Seinfeld episode, though.
Hi, Elaine.
Yeah, this isn't a very good time, George.
I just wanted to talk to Tony for a minute.
Step off, George. I don't want to see you.
What? Me? Step off?
Yeah. Tony says you better step off, George.
But why? It wasn't my fault. You asked me for a sandwich. I made such delicious sandwiches, Elaine.
Just beat it, dude!
So anyway, yeah, and like another weird thing about this is they don't actually have real sex in the movie. They have like a virtual reality experience. And she actually calls sex as fluid transfer.
Right.
Which is like, what? So you know, apparently you have to, you know, apply for a license to actually procreate and have a child. So you're not allowed to have sex as the... like in the sense that we know it anyway. And in this euphoric future, there's no swearing. You get fined for swearing. The cops have no idea how to be cops. The only place to get a gun is in a museum. They call the murder code 187 penal code in Los Angeles as a murder, death, kill in this, which is weird because it makes it longer. And of course the three seashells gag, which has something to do with wiping your butt after you take a poop. So I mean, this movie to me is kind of a train wreck, but it's a freaking awesome train wreck. I mean, just these two guys who are basically like considered barbarians, kind of duking it out in this like future society where, you know, no one can stop a murderer or a criminal. And you know, actually the performances in this movie were surprisingly good, and Wesley Snipes like really goes over the top to make this maniacal character that was awesome. So, I mean, to me, like, yeah, I guess like the critical acclaim wasn't that good, but it's definitely my favorite pick of a good bad movie.
I think in terms of the quote unquote bad movies that Stallone has made, this one's got to be looked at the most favorably now when you look back. Obviously the audience score kind of backs that up. But it's also it's a perfect mix of bad movie and I don't want to say substance, but
right.
I mean, I guess that's what it is. Like, there's enough to grab onto that it's not just dumb and silly. It's you know, it's compelling in a way. It's interesting. It's really, really entertaining. And it's also known for getting a bunch of things right about how the future would be.
Yeah.
Kind of in a similar way, mixing reality and fantasy that Last Action Hero did. It predicted Arnold Schwarzenegger's political aspirations.
Right. Yeah.
Not quite the same. I mean, foreigners, I guess, can't be president, but unless the 61st Amendment passes, like it did here.
The 61st, yes.
But it also predicted Wesley Snipes's criminal record.
Well, you know, it's funny that you said that, because that's true. I thought you were going to get more towards like the outrage, you know, social justice warrior culture we have now, where you can't say
that's the big one
anything, you know, without having an opinion and being wrong, you know. But yeah, I think I think the underlying theme of the movie is good too, because it's kind of like, you know, this has been a theme for years in real life of, you know, for in order to be safe and peaceful, you have to give up your freedom.
Exactly.
And that's kind of like what happened in this movie. And, you know, there's this underground element, which was perfectly casted as Dennis Leary.
Right.
You know, that steals food only because they're hungry. But, you know, he even says it. He's like, I want to read Playboy magazine and, you know, cover myself in butter and, you know, whatever he was saying. Like, you know, it's a freedom of choice thing. And that's kind of how, you know, and it's kind of like that in California now, if you live there. You know, in the sake of democracy and liberalism, you know, they're pretty strict about what you can and can't do over there. But that's another discussion for later. But, you know, I think you're right. And, you know, maybe at the time, because, you know, when it came out, and, you know, I was 12, you know, you were 11. So we probably weren't really paying attention to the political landscape.
Right.
Honestly, I didn't until Bill Clinton was impeached. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Going backwards, you know, I think it's, you know, it was a really good, the theme. And it was shockingly accurate. Like, even the funny stuff, like you said, too, like Wesley Snipes being a criminal.
Right.
And, you know, all that stuff.
Self-driving cars, actually, as well, are kind
yeah,
of
they're
really
getting,
heading.
I know. Yeah. I drove here today. My car, it lane corrects if you go out of your lane, and it turns it back into your lane for you. It's really weird. and it kind of pisses me off, because sometimes it does it even when you're, like, switching lanes. But not always, you know, good.
Uh-oh. Well, speaking of staying on the road, we're going to move on down it here, because that'll bring this episode of the Nerd Bomber Podcast to a close. I have been your friend Claude.
And I've been Cousin Adam.
And I'm just Jamie.
And we will see you next time.
The Nerd Bomber Podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WHAM Network.